This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by our friends at Valiant Comics, who would like us to tell you about Bloodshot Reborn coming up. Now, Matt, let me tell you something, brother. I got a package in the mail from Valiant Comics this week that had The Valiant 1 through 3 in it. Have you read this comic?
I got one of those packages as well, and it is a beautiful, beautiful looking comic book.
It is off the chain. And if you are not reading this comic, you need to be reading this comic. And if you are reading this comic, then you know that when you finish this comic, you're going to want to read more about Bloodshot.
You really are. Bloodshot Reborn is the new take on Bloodshot by writer Jeff Lemire and artist Miko Suyan. And here's the thing. A lot of times, comics publishers, superhero publishers, will do new takes on characters or new number one issues about characters. And they're not really that different. It just changes one small thing so they can do a new number one. Bloodshot Reborn does not do that. It is a totally new direction for the character of Bloodshot. I can't really tell you anything more than that. But it is a very interesting direction, a really clever direction, and one that I find immensely intriguing, and I think you will as well. It's got gorgeous art, absolutely gorgeous art, and there's even some art by Jeff Lemire in this book in places that you might not expect. Trust me, this is what you're going to want to do. You're going to want to go to your comics retailer. You're going to want to tell them, order me Bloodshot Reborn. And tell him War Rocket Ajax sent you.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax. To bring back his body.
Welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most dangerous and destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. And we are your friendly hosts. My name is Chris Sims. Hi, how you doing? Hope we can be friends. With me as always is the extremely friendly Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing very well. I had a fortune cookie tonight that told me that my kindness to others would be returned.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Now, that's last week you threatened to edit me out of the show.
But I
didn't. So I assumed by not doing that, that is a kindness that is being repaid this week.
That's right. I didn't edit you out. And all is well. We got a great show for everybody this week. We're talking to our good friend of the show, multiple-time guest, Chris Burnham.
One of the good guys, I would say.
The artist on lots and lots of things that you have read, but most recently, the artist on Nameless with Grant Morrison, and just announced the writer of the Marvel Comics Secret Wars E is for Extinction miniseries, which is probably going to be a lot of fun. I assume it's going to be a lot of fun. Chris Burnham is a fun guy, and we are looking forward to talking to him. But before we do that, Chris, we got some business.
We are supported by our listeners who are backing the show on Patreon. And I just want to say, like, in all seriousness, I went and looked at the Patreon campaign a little bit this week. And I legit messed it up. There were tears in my eyes looking at the Patreon campaign. It means so much to me and Matt that there are people out there who have been listening to the show for as long as they have, that believe in the show, that believe in us and what we do, that are willing to throw a few bucks behind us. It is by no means a requirement. If you don't have the money to spare on the show, that's totally cool. But the people who do and are throwing something behind it, it really means a lot to me. I paid my health insurance bill this week, and I got my car fixed, so I was thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, it's for people who make stuff like this show, mostly just to do it, and once you have a base of listeners who are interested, for them, you know, we could skip a lot of weeks doing this show, but we do it because we appreciate our listeners as much as it may seem like we don't sometimes. And we want
as confrontational as we are as a general rule.
Yeah, and we want to do a great show for you guys. So the fact that the listeners want to give something back to us is so, so immensely gratifying. And speaking of giving things back, hopefully we have officially got our T-shirt design.
It looks great.
It looks so good.
It looks fantastic.
We're in the process of getting that finalized. We'll order some T-shirts once we have, you know, the financial situation worked out. And then also, the keychains and the stickers that have been promised are also going to be on the way soon. We've just had some business stuff we've had to take care of. It's tax time, you know, everybody. But
thanks, Jack Benny, for dropping in with that.
Yeah, Jack Benny had to let everybody know. But all those physical rewards are going to be coming. I think we're going to maybe try to record some more bonus audio, maybe even this week, for all the backers who have been getting bonus audios. Chris has been drawing sketches for the past three episodes. So we're trying to give you some value for your donation. And we're going to read a few donor names after all that preamble. So here we go, Chris. Luke Hawkins.
Thank you, Luke.
Andrew Knox.
Thank you, Andrew.
Ryan Bielik. I think that's how you say his name.
See, this is why I'm glad I only have to say the first name. Thank you, Ryan.
Matthew Bird.
Oh, thank you, Matthew.
Jeff McRory.
That's your name. You finally got one.
Yeah, that's my name. Jeff McRory.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
Robert Young.
Thanks, Robert.
James Harmon.
Oh, thank you, James Harmon. I love Community.
David LaRosse.
Thank you, David.
David Lee Roth. We've made that joke before.
I wasn't going to do it.
Joseph Kemp.
Thank you, Joseph.
Charles Arthur.
President Charles Arthur. Thank you very much.
That's right. Joe G.
Is that the Kid Rock's little friend?
I don't remember what his name was.
I don't know why these turn insulting so quick, and I always feel bad about it immediately after I say it. Thank you, Joe.
Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
James Todd.
Thanks, James.
And Patrick O'Duffy.
Oh, longtime supporter. Thank you, Patrick, and best to your wife as well.
Thank you to all those Patreon patrons. We'll be reading out more names in the weeks to come.
Genuine, like, sincere thanks to everybody for that. It makes us it is a bright spot in our days when we get to do that.
It fills our hearts. And now we're going to fill your ears with checks.
That's
and
an amazing segue. That's worth it. You just earned the money, Matt. So come on and diggity-check
yourself before you wreck yourself. All right, Chris, what do you have to check in with this week?
Good news, following up on last week's check, my car trouble was not as bad as I thought it was. So I have a car once again. I am no longer isolated in my apartment. But the big thing is that I bought a bunch of Transformers comics this week, and I am furious about it. I'm so upset.
What? Why are you so mad about these Transformers comics?
Okay, literally last week, I followed David Willis on the Tumblr. And Willis is a big Transformers guy. He does the Short Packed comic and the Dumbing of Age comic, both of which are I actually really like Dumbing of Age. You should check it out. Well worth your time. And he's always posting screenshots of a Transformers message board where there is a hot debate going on right now over whether there should be female Transformers. And as you might expect, it is awful. The things people are saying are the worst.
I don't even give me any examples.
So last week, I'm like, I go on Twitter and I say that I will never enjoy the Transformers as much as I enjoy not liking the Transformers. Because the thing is, I don't have anything against them. They're just, you know, they never got their hooks into me when I was a kid. I watched Mask and G.I. Joe and He-Man, and He-Man did not last long and does not hold up as we have seen on Movie Fighters. And so many people jump in and they're like, Chris, you would really like More Than Meets the Eye, which is there are, I think, two IDW series going on right now in addition to Transformers versus G.I. Joe. Like, oh, you would really like these comics. I'm like, I don't care. Guys, I don't care. And people are like, no, you would really like them. You should give them a chance. And they're saying this because so many times in my life I have written a column that begins with, I didn't think I would like this, but then I liked it. So people know me. They know this is a thing that I do. And Chad Bowers, my co-writer on Downset Fight and other comics, Bill and Ted out in April, Bill and Ted number 2. He's a big fan. Well, he's a big Transformers guy, and he's a big fan of More Than Meets the Eye, and he tells me how good it is. And so I finally told people, like, look, I'm not going to go out and buy them. They're 3 years in at this point. But if they show up on the Humble Bundle or something, I'm going to get them. And I did this because I know that there was a Transformers Humble Bundle, like, 6 months ago, and I was like, there's no way they're going to do another one. So, like, 2 days ago, there's a Transformers Humble Bundle. And over the weekend, I had legitimately asked Chad. I was like, "Hey, man, what's Transformers More Than Meets the Eye about?" And he told me about it, and you know, it sounds fine. And then I was like, "Do you think I should read them?" And he was like, "Chris, you will not like them as much as you'd like not liking it. Like, don't read it. I love them, and they're very good comics, but do not read them." So I went in, and it's like, I mean, you know this. The Humble Bundle is a stupid deal. It's like ridiculously good. I put in like $12 and got 75 comics. So now I'm going to have to read 75 Transformers comics.
Yeah.
I'm so upset. I'm so mad.
Every Humble Bundle is like, I'd be an idiot not to do this.
Yeah. It's like if they are good at all, it's worth it. But the thing is, they're going to have to be so good that I am okay with liking the Transformers now. And so I've been talking about how maybe 2015 is the year I stop liking everything but the Transformers. Maybe 2015 is just the year I give it all up. I'm a Transformers guy now. No more wrestling. No more video games. Just Transformers comics. Matt, what are you up to this week?
I am actually going to follow up on something from last week as well.
Oh. It's the update.
That's right. That's the update theme. I went to try to go get my eyes checked a few days ago. We're recording this on Thursday, as we usually do. I made an appointment, actually it was yesterday, Wednesday, to go get my eyes checked. And the only place I could do it on really, really short notice was the Optical Vision Center at Walmart. At a local Walmart. That is actually out of town. It's not actually in the city of Asheville. It is in Weaverville, which is just north of Asheville. And going to this eye exam yesterday was one of the weirdest experiences. It was like I transported into like a short comedy film. So here's what I do. I leave my house in the middle of work. I tell my work colleagues, I'm going to my eye appointment. I drive up to Weaverville. I get to the Walmart. I walk in. The Vision Center is closed. This is 2 in the afternoon. The Vision Center is closed. There's a sign up on the little, you know, velvet ropes or whatever that say...
Matt, were you actually at a nightclub?
I may have been. They weren't velvet ropes, but, you know, they were those dividers. And it just said, lunch back at 2:45. So I go, okay, I guess I'm waiting here until 2:45 at Walmart. So I walked around the Walmart. I did laps around the Walmart. I walked to a Dollar Tree and bought some Starbursts. And then I came back at a little after 2:30, and the Vision Center was open. So I went up to the desk, and I was like, I'm here for an eye exam. I think it was supposed to be at 2. And the employee at the desk at the Vision Center is just like, oh, yeah, the eye exams aren't actually here. They're around the corner in the office. So I'm like, I wish I had known that. So I go around, and there's this door that says eye exams on it. I walk in, and there's this little tiny doctor's office inside the Walmart. and I see these two very elderly people. I believe they're a married couple. The man is the eye doctor. The woman, I believe, is his, you know, administrative assistant who manages all that stuff. So I go up and I say, I'm here for an exam. I think I was supposed to be here at 2, but I thought it was somewhere else, and I'm sorry. And the woman's just like, it's fine. Just fill out this form, and we'll get you all set. So I sit down, I fill out the form, I give it to her, and the doctor comes out eventually later. This very old man comes out, and he goes, okay, we're going to get you checked out. So he takes me in a room, he does a couple tests on me, and then he's like, all right, now we have to go in this other room. So we get up, and we go to another room. He tries to turn on his machine that is the machine that puts the eye test up on the wall with the light inside, and that puts up, like, the letter, you know, the lines with the letters. It will not come on. He flips the switch up and down a bunch of times. It does not come on. He cannot figure out why it's not coming on. And he's like, I think the light's bulb burned out in this thing. So he takes the back off of it. He starts looking at the light bulb. He's like trying to figure out what's going on with this light bulb. He opens a drawer and starts looking around for light bulbs. At this point, I'm sitting in a chair watching an old man look through drawers for a light bulb.
Did you ever figure out who killed Laura Palmer?
It felt very weirdly David Lynch. He eventually finds this light bulb that he thinks is a replacement, but it won't fit. After what had to be 10 or 15 minutes of this, his secretary walks in, his administrative assistant walks in, and goes, what's going on? And he goes, this light's burned out, and I don't know how to replace it. And we don't have it. I don't think we have any replacement bulbs. We're going to have to go to the other Walmart and ask them if they have it.
Wait. Do they not sell light bulbs at Walmart?
Not for, like, not these tiny little light bulbs for, like, delicate optometric equipment. So he's like, they're just going to have to go to the other vision center to find a light bulb. And then he just turns to me and he goes, I can't check your eyes. We're going to have to reschedule. And I go, okay. I get up and I leave. Like, I give him my phone number and I leave. And then I went back today and he checked my eyes. And his machine worked.
How are your eyes doing, Matt? They good?
I ordered some test frames, 5 test frames from Warby Parker. Maybe I'll put on the frames and take pictures of myself, and the World of Ajax listeners can vote on which frames I should get.
Ooh, that's a good one. That is a good one.
That eye exam that I had to leave because his equipment didn't work was one of the weirdest experiences of my life. It was surreal. Can you imagine going to an eye appointment and then being told to leave because the equipment isn't working?
That is pretty weird.
Okay, let's make some recommendations. Chris, what do you have to recommend?
If people have been listening to this show for a really long time, they know that there are things I like and things I don't like. Matt, what do I not like?
Our listeners? No, that's a joke.
No, I love listeners. I don't like scary movies.
You don't like scary movies. That's true.
I don't like scary movies. But there are 3 things that I do like. I like video games that I get free or cheap.
Right.
Usually from a year or 2 ago.
Correct.
I like Japanese television programs for tiny babies.
Sure.
And I like sports documentaries.
You like all of those things. I'd say not just Japanese TV shows for tiny babies. I would say lots of TV shows for tiny babies, but
it's mostly shows for tiny babies. Yeah. If you count pro wrestling as shows for tiny babies.
And I do.
But today we're going to talk about one of those third items. We're going to talk about a sports documentary, one that I was really, really pleased with. It is on Netflix. It's one of the ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries, so it's about an hour long. And it is called June 17th, 1994. And it is one that I think everyone who likes – if you have enjoyed the sports documentaries I have recommended before, which is so weird because I don't actually like sports at all – I only like sports documentaries. If you've enjoyed any of the ones I've talked about, this one is really worth checking out. Now, Matt, do you know what happened on June 17th, 1994?
That is the date of the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase. I've actually watched this documentary as well, because I was told it was the best of the 30 for 30.
I don't know if it's the best of the 30 for 30s.
Well, I was told it was the best.
Rocky is really good.
Yeah, that may have been the first season too. But I remember asking, like, what are some of the good 30 for 30 episodes? And a lot of people recommended that one to me.
Yeah, so that is the date of the Bronco chase, which I think, you know, if you are – I mean, geez, I was 12 and I remember seeing that on TV, you know? But the documentary is also about everything else that happened that day in the world of sports, because not only was there the O.J. Simpson Bronco chase, it was the victory parade for the New York Rangers for the only Stanley Cup victory they have ever had in 60 years as a franchise, 75 years now as a franchise. They have only won the Stanley Cup once. It's their victory parade. That night was a game in the NBA Finals that was also involved a team in New York. It was Arnold Palmer's last tournament golf game. It was the day that Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 30th home run in a single season. It was the opening ceremonies of the World Cup in Chicago. It's everything that could possibly happen in sports happening on the same day. Like, all really significant things. That were, of course, overshadowed by, you know, the biggest news story of the decade, the O.J. Simpson chase.
Right.
But all that stuff was going on at once. And I have to imagine that was a weird, weird day to be someone who was into sports. What's really interesting about the documentary is that there's no interviews and there's no voiceovers. It's all just news footage from that day. There's a little bit of like older news footage setting it up at the beginning, but then the majority of the movie is just news footage that aired or was recorded on June 17th, 1994, put together with a little bit of background music. No interviews with people that were talking, no narrator kind of giving the story. It's all just that stuff, and it's super weird. Like, just seeing how it all connects is really, really fascinating. So if you are – now, Matt, you said you saw it, and I assumed you thought it was pretty good too, because it's pretty good.
It is. It's really good.
Yeah. So if you are at all a fan of sports documentaries or, you know, interesting documentaries at all, I would say check this one out. It's put together in a really interesting way, and it is in fact one of the better 30 for 30s that I've seen. The one about the ABA was not as good as I wanted it to be, though, which is a bummer.
I'm always interested in the idea of just like one really, really important day,
mm-hmm,
where lots and lots of important things happen. And that June 17th, 1994 documentary just like nails that atmosphere so well about so many different important things happening on one day.
We all remember the chase. Like, we all remember the helicopter shot of the Bronco going down the freeway. But there's so much more to it. And I mean, look, let's be honest. We remember that because it was in like a million TV shows and movies and a fucking WrestleMania. Or no, it was a SummerSlam. It was at a SummerSlam.
Yes.
Where somebody rolled up in the white Bronco. There's so much more to that chase that you see in the documentary. Like, the footage that you don't really see too much anymore. Like, that people were parking their cars on the overpass and just like waving to OJ. It's super surreal to see it. So definitely check that out. Like I said, it's on Netflix and it's highly enjoyable. I went ahead and added a bunch of 30 for 30s to my queue, so I'll probably be talking about those for the next couple weeks. Get that one about Brian Bosworth to look forward to. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is a little weird for something that we normally do on the show. Like, normally we recommend movies or video games or TV shows or books or whatever. I'm actually recommending a service. Okay. If you follow me on Twitter, you may have seen me tweet about selling a big chunk of my print comics in the past week or so. It's largely a space thing. I just wanted to get rid of some stuff that was taking up a lot of space. But also just like it was, you know, nice to sell the comics and get a little money in my pocket. And the guy who came and bought my comics actually came to my house, looked through the books, and then made me an offer and drove them back to his business. It's not a comic shop. It's a business that pretty much exclusively sells comics on eBay. And from what I understand, he will come to anywhere in the contiguous United States and check out your comics to buy them if you have a sizable enough collection or some like really like easy to sell books. Like if you have a complete run of The Walking Dead or some Golden Age books or, you know, some good condition Silver Age books, he might come check those out. He'll probably will come check those out. His business is called Infinity Comics. They're based in Clemens, North Carolina. So he actually didn't have to come all that far for me. But he came. He was very fair with me. He gave me a fair price for the comics I sold. And in the end, like, I certainly felt, as I said on Twitter, I felt, you know, this loss, this sense of loss, because I spent years and years acquiring those comics, and they have meaning to me. But I felt probably, I didn't feel ripped off. I didn't feel like I made a mistake. I didn't feel like I had just given my comics to some guy who was gonna treat them like garbage or just sell them to whoever for nothing. I really got the sense that like he cared, he wanted to like do right by me, and that meant a lot. So if you're thinking about selling some comics, I think you could do a lot worse than going to Infinity Comics and seeing if maybe they can help you out. Their website is infinitycomicsllc.com. We'll put a link to them in the show notes because they did me right. And he doesn't even know that I have this podcast and I'm doing this, but I'm going to do it. All right.
So you do not have to tell him that War Rocket Ajax sent you unless you're buying Ninjak, unless you're buying Ninjak comics from him.
Those are our checks and recs. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Oh, I love comics.
Let's start with Spider-Woman.
Before we start, can I just say, comics are so fucking good right now.
They really are.
There's so much good stuff out. It's very exciting to read comics every week.
Let's start with this one. Let's start with Spider-Woman number 5, which
now, this is
kind of like a number 1.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not a number 1. It's a new team. It's a new direction. She's got a new costume. It's not like we haven't seen Marvel relaunch a comic after 4 months before. Like, it feels weird that this is not a number 1. And I should say, just in the interest of full disclosure, I do have a working relationship with a Marvel editor. Jordan D. White and I do a podcast about Sailor Moon together, so heads up, everybody out there. Spider-Woman should have been a number 1, because in lieu of being a number 1, there's a little, Secret Wars 2 continues in this issue triangle on the cover that says, new costume, new status quo, which is a really weird way to phrase that idea. It is really weird to say there is a new status quo. There is a new version of everything staying the same in this issue. But it is a really fresh start. Matt, did you read this one yet?
I have not actually picked it up yet, but I do want to read it for sure.
It's by Dennis Hopeless and Javier Rodriguez. And Dennis Hopeless is a writer that I have been a fan of. He did that amazing Legion of Monsters one-shot that had Elsa Bloodstone in it a few years ago that made me a really, really big fan. And he also did, I believe, Avengers Arena, which I enjoyed but never finished, actually. And it's an interesting new direction. It's all about Jessica Drew not being an Avenger because she wants to be a solo hero. To the point where she explicitly says, I don't want to – like she all but says, I don't want to be part of a team book anymore. I want to be a solo book. And she kind of goes around and she tries to help people. And it turns out that she's not very good at it. You know, her heart is in the right place, but she's so used to being part of a team, and she's so used to kind of being, you know, coordinated with the Avengers, that she's having a lot of trouble getting back into that Spider-Man style swing around and stop crime type of thing. And that sounds really weird, and that sounds like it, you know, taking this character who's been around forever and kind of making her a hapless, you know, not so good at it heroine, would be, you know, vaguely insulting to the character, but it's really not. Hopeless kind of goes out of his way to explain it, that she has been part of a team forever. You know, she was a Hydra sleeper agent. She worked for S.H.I.E.L.D. She's been an Avenger. She's done all this stuff, but she's never really gotten to be a solo heroine. So it all works out really well. I think the book is already, you know, before it came out, it was drawing comparisons to Batgirl.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, like, this, not to insult it, but it is the Batgirling of Spider-Woman, of Jessica Drew.
Yeah,
but in that regard, I'm glad to hear that there's a lot of the personality and history of Jessica Drew, the character, that still shines through in the book.
Yeah, and I think that is a fair comparison. But I don't think it's a matter of, you know, oh, somebody at Marvel saw Batgirl and just rushed this into production. I'm not sure that's, you know, I don't think that's what happened. I think it's more a matter of, if you like the new direction of Batgirl, you'll like the new direction of Spider-Woman. Ben Urich shows up, who is always a fun character to read about. I know you and me like Ben Urich. There's a great scene with a police training exercise. That's one of those things that I love. I love little bits and pieces of seeing how the world works in superhero universes that maybe aren't the focus, but they, you know, come up in natural ways. Like say what you will about Kevin Smith as a comics writer, but I do really like that in Daredevil number one, when the car hits a fire hydrant, Daredevil's like, oh yeah, when I was a lawyer, I brokered, I helped put together a bill that covers all the damage from superhero fights. Like, I like that was kind of tossed in there offhand, because it explains something without getting in the way. And there's a lot of that in this Spider-Woman book. And it's finally getting to see Jessica Drew as a superhero private eye working with Ben Urich on a case that involves a lot of kind of... And again, this is something that you and I are both big fans of. It's C-list supervillains.
Yes.
So... a lot of fun. The one thing I don't like about it is that I don't like costumes where the sunglasses work as the mask. I don't like it when Hawkeye wears sunglasses. I don't like it when Spider-Woman wears sunglasses. I don't even really like it when Superboy wears sunglasses, and I love Superboy's sunglasses. So yeah, I would say Spider-Man or Spider-Woman number 5 should have been a number 1, but definitely go pick it up. Treat it as a number 1. Give it a shot.
The next comic we're going to be talking about is Descender number 1, the new Image series from Jeff Lemire, who also had another number 1 issue this week, all new Hawkeye number 1, which was
Jeff Lemire, the writer of Bloodshot Reborn.
That's right. We'll just say that Hawkeye is really good, and I'm sure we'll talk about it in the weeks to come. But Descender is his new book with Dustin Nguyen, and
ooh, that is a good team.
I'll tell you this, it is really easy to think from the get-go that this book is Mass Effect the comic. There are a lot of similarities to Mass Effect right away. And then it turns into something else. So if you're reading it and you've played Mass Effect and you see that the setting at the beginning seems a lot like the Citadel, because it does, and there's a Galactic High Council, and there are evil robots that seem a lot like the Reapers that are showing up, because they are a lot like the Reapers. But then it takes a whole different turn, where it's focused on this little boy who turns out to be a robot, who ends up being kind of the crux of the whole thing. And it ends up being really intriguing and is clearly going a very different direction from Mass Effect. So, and there's also a big time jump in this issue. Dustin Nguyen's art is gorgeous. It's got some really, like, interesting, unconventional coloring to it in here. But it looks really good. The character designs are great. So, despite its similarity to Mass Effect, which is evident, I think Descender is absolutely worth a read.
Look, ain't nothing wrong with making a comic that's a lot like a thing you like.
It's true.
Skater X number 2 coming later this month.
There's also a little bit of a weird similarity to Red Dwarf, but I'll let you figure that out yourself. And then the last comic we're going to talk about, Chris, is Princess Leia number 1. This is the third new Marvel Star Wars comic that we'll have talked about. We've had Star Wars number 1. We've had Darth Vader number 1. And now Princess Leia from Mark Waid and Terry Dodson.
This is, again, this is directly edited by Jordan D. White. And I had a conversation with him when we were recording on Sunday. And, like, he did not realize that these are the first pieces of Star Wars media I have been a part of in 10 years. and I had to explain to him that I hate Star Wars and why. I have liked both of the comics that I've read so far. I'm actually liking the Darth Vader series way more than I expected to. Like, even if, as a fan of Kieran Gillen, the premise of that it's the Emperor treating Darth Vader like a shitty kid who can't get his job done, it's really hilarious to me. Obviously, Mark Waid is a favorite here on the podcast, and we both like Terry Dodson a lot, I think. And I will say, I legit think this is some of Terry Dodson's best work in years.
It looks great.
He is going in and doing a lot of expressive faces that I think Terry Dodson's always been good, but I think a lot of the time he falls into that trap of, you know,
cheesecake.
Yeah, cheesecake, you know, which, why wouldn't he? But this is, there's a lot of detail in his art in this one.
The way he draws the costumes, and I think the color brings a lot of this out too. The way that the costumes are drawn, because this issue starts at the end of episode 4, at the end of A New Hope during the ceremony where the medals are presented. And just like the way he draws the costumes is great. Like every costume in this issue looks just spot on perfect.
Yeah, it really does. And this is, I think, my favorite of the Star Wars books so far. I really, really liked this one. I feel like the time between the end of Star Wars and the beginning of Empire Strikes Back is a really interesting bit of the saga, as they say. And I'm glad that that's where these books are kind of are planting themselves. Like, I like that that's a part of it. That it's going to start here and kind of go through, as opposed to starting after Return of the Jedi or starting from, you know, between the prequels and the original trilogy. And getting to see Princess Leia do stuff is really good and really refreshing, because the kind of thing that I think we get in Star Wars and Empire that I really liked when I was a big Star Wars fan was that, you know, the Leia of Star Wars is, like, tough as shit, dude.
Yeah, like, she goes and does things.
Yeah, she shit-talks Darth Vader to his face, and it's, like, the first thing she does. And then she watches her home get destroyed. That's really interesting. And again, like, I am not much of an expanded universe guy. You know, I never was. I read a bunch of novels, but whatever. I don't know if anything has really dealt with Leia having to deal with a fucking genocide like this book is.
Most of what happens in this book is people telling Leia, hey, your parents are dead. Grieve. Go deal with that. And Leia saying, no, I have to act now.
Yeah, Leia, like, she fucking Jesse Ventura in Predator, is it, man? I don't got time to grieve.
I have two relatively minor complaints about the issue.
Okay.
One is Leia's intentions are not 100% clear. She's going to find the survivors of Alderaan. I get that. And I assume the idea is that, like, the people who were not on Alderaan when it was destroyed, they're going to go find them.
Right, because the Empire is hunting them down.
Right.
Because they're going to make an example of, like, in order to cover for the public relations nightmare that is the destruction of the Death Star, all the Alderaanians, who they're going to make them scapegoats for the rebellion.
Right.
Which is, I think that's a really good premise.
Sure. I just, I'm not sure what their plan is once they find these people. And then the other thing is, there's a scene in this where R2-D2 projects a hologram that's projecting a hologram. And that is bullshit.
You don't like that Total Recall shit, man? You really think this is the real Quaid?
Other than that, I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah, I like Yvonne, who is a sexy lady X-Wing pilot, because it's a Terry Dodson book, so of course she is.
Right.
I like that she's this, you know, this royalist from Alderaan, who is so, like, so pissed off that now, like, she has to follow Leia. Because Leia's the last, you know, she's the last member of the Alderaanian royal house. And I like that Wade, in particular, is going like, no, this was a society that had kings and queens. Like, this was a society that had a monarchy. As opposed to the prequels, you know, obviously they wanted Amidala to be a princess because it rhymes, you know, because they wanted the symmetry there. But she was elected to lead the planet at the age of 14, so none of that shit makes sense. But I like that they're going like, no, there are people who had loyalty to this monarchy that are still going to have, you know, loyalty to this monarchy because it's the only piece of their planet they have left. Like, there's a part where she says, how much of our culture can we afford to lose at this point?
Yeah, it's this weird thing where, like, it starts making sense and crystallizing in your mind where it's like, yeah, there was a Senate, yeah, there was a Republic, but there was also this monarchy that was mostly symbolic, but that people have loyalty to.
Like I said, I don't know if this has been explored in other media. I know it hasn't been explored by Mark Wade and Terry Dodson. So as much as I was trying to kind of resist these comics in the same way with the Transformers, I'm kind of excited about Star Wars again, and I hate it. I hate it so much.
Speaking of conflicts amongst the stars, we should talk to our guest, Chris Burnham, the artist of Nameless, which is full of, like, bloody dismemberments out in space. So, Chris, let's talk to Chris Burnham.
Joining us on the program this week, returning to the show, is a good friend of ours, the artist of some of my favorite comics, an artist who finally got to put Batman back in his real clothes. I'm very excited about that. Chris Burnham is here. You'll know Chris Burnham from Batman Incorporated, from Nameless, which is going on now that we want to talk about. And we just had a little announcement. The day that we're recording this show, we had very good timing. The upcoming Secret Wars Ease for Extinction tie-in series.
Yay! Chris, did and am doing all these things.
Welcome back to the show, Chris. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me, bud. Yeah, it's fun to virtually be here.
That makes it sound like it is virtually fun to be here. It's yeah. It's not fun, no. But it's close enough.
There's right. A studio somewhere in the middle of the country where we are all holograms talking to one.
Oh man, I wish. I that would be awesome, Matt. What's our Patreon level before we get a hologram studio?
I'm just hoping that we have the technology by 2018.
We're not going to be doing the show in 2018.
Well, that's only like 1 year away.
Chris, you may want to go back and look at that again.
Time is moving really, really quick these days. I feel like 2018 is going to be here in 3 or 4 months.
So how are you doing, man? Like, it's been a while since we've really talked to each other.
I'm doing pretty great. I'm definitely overworked and kind of stressed out, but this month is going crazy. My new Nameless just came out. I got Nixon's Pals coming out in like 2 weeks, I think. There's this Officer Down movie happening. I'm writing X-Men. It's
whoa, stop. There's an Officer Down movie?
I've been tweeting about that bullshit nonstop.
I mean, look, I follow you on Twitter, but you know I don't get out of bed till noon. So.
Oh, shit. That's fair enough. Yeah, so the drummer from Slipknot, Sean Craven, he's the guy, he directs all their music videos. He's directing the Officer Down movie, which is being produced by Mark Neveldine, the guy that directed and produced the Crank movies. Yeah.
Neveldine and Taylor.
Yeah, this movie's going to make Crank 2 look like Crank.
All right. If anybody hasn't read Officer Down out there, because I don't think Officer Down was the first thing that I read that you did. I think it was Nixon's Pals.
Yeah, it's definitely Nixon's Pals.
I think that's how we met each other, because I reviewed Nixon's Pals and I said it was great. And you were like, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, yeah, new best friend.
Yeah, at the time, I was a big fan of yours.
Oh, thank you. but yeah, like, if anybody hasn't read Officer Down, like, Neville Dean is the perfect guy. He is the guy who is going to understand what, for Officer Down.
I think it's going to be perfect. Like, utterly, utterly mindless, you know, violence and aggression. I hope it is 88 minutes long. Yeah, right? Oh my God, it's so exciting.
How close of an adaptation of the comic is it? Do you know? Do you have any involvement at all?
Yeah, Joe Casey wrote the script, and it basically is the comic. Like, it is the same script as the comic with a bunch of stuff, you know, added to make it an actual story. But, like, all the scenes in the comic are in the movie script. And then there's just more stuff added to it to turn it into less of just, like a Ramones song into an actual movie.
Now, Casey, does he do a lot of scripts now? Because he's part of Man of Action, right?
Right. So, I don't know what he does with his day. Like, Man of Action bills themselves as, like, it's all four of them are kind of one unified whole. So what any of them does, like, they produce one of the Spider-Man cartoons, but what Joe Casey's relationship to that is specifically, I don't know. And they also created Ben 10 and Generator Rex. But as for, like, their individual responsibilities in doing it, I don't really, you know, I'm not positive. But he's definitely written, you know, cartoon and, you know, movie scripts before.
I feel like the more I read of Casey's comics, like, especially his output in recent years, like, I mean, I was reading, you know, I was reading Joe Casey's X-Men in the 90s, and then I was reading Joe Casey's X-Men again in the 2000s.
Right.
And then, like, nowadays, he is, like, the biggest mainstream writer to do the weirdest indie comics. Like, even more than Morrison, who's a guy who I think fits that, even more than Warren Ellis, who's a guy I think fits that. Like, nobody does them, you know, nobody else is doing Godland and Butcher Baker, the Righteous Maker.
Well,
this stuff is bonkers. Have you read the new Captain Victory that he's doing with Nathan Fox?
I've seen a couple of them. I haven't had a chance to really sit down and read them, but I want to. But yeah, Captain Victory is one of those
crazy.
It's one of those Kirby comics that I haven't been able to find.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't, you know, I want to do it in order.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
The sense I get with Joe Casey is that he became this incredibly successful guy through cartoons, and as soon as, you know, they sold off Ben 10 or whatever, just this light bulb went off over his head that just said in it, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, dude does not give a fuck as far as I can tell.
and he also wrote Nixon's Pals, right?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I like Officer Down, but Officer Down, I think you will agree with me, there's not a lot of meat to Officer Down.
No, Officer Down is utterly mindless. Yeah, it is 48 pages or whatever of just people getting killed. And then there's an arbitrary the end at the end.
Yeah, but Nixon's Pals is far and away my favorite thing that Casey's done, because it's such a beautiful high concept. It's the supervillain Bail Bondsman.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I would say it's the best Joe Casey comic ever as well. I happen to have drawn it, but I think it's the best one he's written.
We should point out you do have a financial stake in that being the best Joe Casey comic ever.
Yes, I do have a dog in this fight.
and that's now off. Is Nixon's Pals getting reissued?
We're putting out a color hardcover edition of it, so it's slightly oversized, like just like the Officer Down hardcover is, like, it's like the size of the DC's deluxe hardcovers, I guess, that are just like an inch taller or whatever. So that's the full color Nixon's Pals hardcover comes out. I think it's March 18th in comic stores, and then on, you know, Amazon and bookshops like 2 weeks later.
And who's doing the coloring on that?
Carlos Padilla, who my buddy Tim Seeley introduced me to. It looks pretty awesome. And there's a whole bunch of backup material, like all my character sketches and a bunch of raw scans of the art where you can see, you know, like I didn't fill in any of the blacks, so there's X's all over the place, and there's probably little, you know, notes of me saying, God damn it, you fucked this up. You're going to have to fix this in Photoshop. Like, I'm always making little, you know, derogatory notes to myself on the margins. So all that stuff is in there. And then we've got a bunch of awesome pinups in there. I think the highlight is Jenny Frizen drew Alchema, the girl with the faces on her boobs. And so she did it in the most, you know, gorgeous, good girl, you know, pinup art. And it's like totally beautiful and then just appalling and ridiculous at the same time. It's awesome.
It's faces on her boobs and then nipples where her eyes should be. And it's the weirdest thing because, I mean, I was working at the comic book store when that came in, and it's like, it's, you can't figure out, like, can we put this on the shelf? And if not, how do we censor this cover? Like, where would the bar go?
Right.
Well, I kind of have
those are both really, really good comics.
With the idea of an Officer Down movie, I have the hardcover right here in front of me, and I am just flipping through it and just wondering how on earth this is going to be a movie that's released in any theater.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see them try it.
is this just something that is going to be played at Slipknot concerts?
This is a real movie. Like, there's actual actors and stuff in this thing. So I think we're gonna try and, you know, go as far as we can with it.
Oh.
Yeah, Kim Coates, who plays Tig on Sons of Anarchy, he is starring as Officer Down.
This keeps getting more ridiculous.
And I know a bunch of the other characters who've been cast, but it's not something I can announce publicly on this podcast. But there's a bunch of real actors that are going to be in this movie. It's crazy.
I really would love – you know, the violence is going to be one thing, but I really want to see how the crime bosses who are – a vulture, a tiger, and a lion,
right.
Who I think are collectively the Fortune 500.
As I was drawing the thing, I was never sure if they had like living animal heads or if they were just wearing masks on it. I drew the stupid thing, and I don't know. So they're gonna have to make that choice.
Can we just say, if anybody out there has not read Officer Down, at one point, he fights a kung fu master in a tracksuit whose name is Zen Master Flash. Officer Down is the dumbest comic I've ever read. But it's that great kind of dumb.
Yeah.
It is the closest thing we have in comics to Crank, and like that's so exciting to me that it's gonna be Crank 3.
Yes, I think that should be the subtitle of it.
We were going to talk about other stuff, but you brought that up, and now we're just going to talk about that for the next half hour, I think.
Yeah, that's fine.
No, let's talk about Nameless a little bit. Let's talk about Nameless. Now, obviously, you and Grant Morrison worked together on Batman Incorporated.
Yes, sir.
Which also just came out in an absolute where you and Nathan Fairbairn had to go back in and give Batman his right clothes.
Yeah, put underwear on him. Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, it's so... Look. I love Batman Incorporated. You know that. We've talked about it. I have talked about it at length. But I love that book. But seeing those pages, the flashback to the first Batman Ra's al Ghul story, where he wasn't wearing his new look outfit, the yellow oval, the blue trunks, it broke my heart, Chris. It really did.
I know it did, buddy.
So I was so glad that in the absolute you finally got to go in and fix it. But now I'm mad because I'm not going to buy that book a third time.
I feel your pain. I suspect that at some point they will recollect those because the Batman Inc. has only been in the New 52 style hardcover. They haven't put it in the DC Deluxe hardcover, and I feel like they probably will. So I bet this. I bet this the absolute, the new content gets shrunk down into the whatever they call it, the deluxe hardcover format at some point.
It's going to get shrunk down to another oversized format.
Yes. Shut up. Yes.
No, that's exciting. No, was that
you got a quintuple dip?
I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I got it in issues.
I thought you got this shit for free anyway.
You would think if I get anything, but I don't. Not anymore. I think they finally found out what I've been saying about those comics.
Oh shit.
No, but was it? I know that it's always interesting. And I believe Nathan Fairbairn also did the Scott Pilgrim deluxe editions.
Yes.
So he has been part of these projects two times now, where someone's going back and looking at art they drew a few years ago. And I know that you changed a couple panels around. You know, obviously you didn't go in and redraw the whole thing.
Right.
You did not listen to my suggestion to go back and redraw all of Batman RIP either, unfortunately. No, Tony Daniels, very nice guy. I'm just playing. But yeah, like, was it weird for you to kind of go back and look at it? And did you have to like put a limit on stuff that you wanted to go in and change?
For sure. Like, as far as making changes, and I'm sure I'm forgetting stuff. So I went in and I made Bruce Wayne's face bruised on the first page because we, you know, it was like a flash forward to the you know, time of the last issue, and we didn't realize that he was going to be horribly mangled when I drew the first issue. So I fixed that. I added the W to the top of the Wayne building to make the payoff when it falls off the building and blocks the front door. Like in the script, this is in issue 10 or 11 or something. Grant's like, and then the Wayne falls off falls off the top of the building and blocks the door. Wait, was there a W at the top of the building? Well, there is now. Like all that is in the script, and I was like, God damn it, Grant! No, there's not a W. And so I went in and you know, retroactively added it in, you know, on like 10 or 15 panels, I think, over the course of the series. No one is ever going to notice that, but it drove me crazy.
I like, well, there is now in a panel description. That's always
yeah,
that's always good stuff.
Yeah, real nice.
So,
yeah, and then I went in and redrew all the other fill-in pages, and I wanted to get that done as soon as possible because, you know, everyone's style is always, you know, evolving, you know, over the years, and so I wanted to make sure that I had drawn those before I had drawn basically anything else, so I was still in Batman mode and hadn't, you know, started using new tools and stuff.
Now, revisiting that, was there like something where you just kind of sat back and you're like, oh, well, this page is good. Like, this is good. This is better than I remember it being.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of this stuff is pretty good. There's definitely some that make me cringe a little bit. I'm not going to tell you what those are. But, yeah, there's some pages are better than others, but overall I think it's pretty cool. And holding, you know, this giant absolute that seems to weigh about 1,000 pounds and it's like 75% me, it really is wild to hold like 2 or 3 years of your life in your hands and have it, you know, feel like a substantial, impressive thing. It's pretty cool.
That's that is exciting stuff. So you and Morrison worked on that together. And yep. Then Batman Incorporated comes to an end. You did the Batman Japan issue. You wrote that one.
Right.
Did not draw it, but you did make Batman Japan say Batman kick.
Yes.
Which that is a highlight of the past few years in comics for me, I can assure you.
Thanks.
Like, I want, like, ever since I got into Tokusatsu, like, I want him to say, like, I want superheroes to say that stuff more often.
Yeah, I totally agree. It works great. Like, it's utterly ridiculous, obviously, but it just makes it read way better because you can totally tell exactly what's happening. Yeah, it's awesome. I've become a fan of old 2000 AD in the last couple years. And the over-exposition in a lot of that stuff, I find just to be absolutely charming.
Yeah, I have posted this. My favorite classic 2000 AD page is where Judge Dredd is fighting Frankenstein 2.
Oh, shit. I don't know if I know that one.
Well, he's fighting Frankenstein 2, and there's a guy. It's either a narration box or I think it's dialogue. I think there's a guy in the foreground shouting this. He's like, it's Frankenstein 2. He makes the original Frankenstein look like a jelly baby. I just love that because they didn't think we'd get it just from his name being Frankenstein 2.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, man. That issue also contained Lady Tiger Fist.
Oh, Lady Tiger Fist is great. I'm so mad that no one has cosplayed her yet.
Are you surprised though?
Like, not in the least.
It's even beyond the. Okay, we should say, if anyone hasn't read Batman Incorporated number 11, Lady Tiger Fist is a lady who has tigers for hands. She has tiger heads for hands. But like, even beyond that, her costume is incredibly complicated.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, was that your design, or did Jorge Lucas do that?
It is basically, I mean, I told him to copy off this Mazinger character named Duke Gorgon. Yeah, who's basically a tiger centaur and is dressed like a Roman, you know, legionary or whatever. So Lady Tiger Fist is just a blatant, you know, ripoff and like inversion of him. So she's basically wearing his same outfit.
Well, it's a weird outfit because it's kind of like Xena Warrior Princess, but a little bit of Aquaman.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, which I just think is hilarious.
So so cut to the future, you know, a year or two later. And you're working on Nameless out from Image.
In the year 2017.
In the year... Is it? Oh, that's right. That's right. I forgot 2018 is next year. I've already forgotten things we just talked about.
That was a callback.
That was a good callback, Matt. I'm sorry I didn't yes-and you on that.
Yeah, I got it.
I'm sorry I was trying to figure out what the date was on Batman Incorporated number 11. So, how did Nameless come about? Like, was it just like, oh, hey... I like working with you. You'll draw the W on top of the building.
Right. Yeah, we've been talking, you know, since the first email I'd gotten from him about doing a creator-owned project at some point in the nebulous future. And we met at San Diego, I guess, it'll be 2 years ago this July. And we sat down at the Wired Cafe or something, and he pitched me on like six different ideas. And we... both agreed on this one perfect idea. Like, I almost started crying thinking about how great the comic was going to be. And then 2 weeks later, it was like, yeah, we're not going to do that one. We're going to do the other one we talked about. Yeah, so Nameless is kind of a smooshing together of two of the other ideas he pitched me. And one of the other ones was he had initially pitched for to write the fourth Indiana Jones movie, what would eventually be Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I'm sorry. Grant Morrison pitched Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull.
Well, I mean, he pitched whatever, you know, the unnamed fourth Indiana Jones. I wish they would have chosen his idea. I can't say what it was, but it's awesome. I was thinking about drawing, you know, Schmindiana Schmoans. that comic would also be rad.
Oh man, that's bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally plausible that we could turn that into, you know, Nameless 2 or Nameless 3.
Well, the interesting thing about Nameless to me is that, you know, every time we hear Grant talk about it, every time we kind of hear him talk about it, it's got this thing where he's like, oh yeah, this, you know, I get all the positive love of humanity out in the superhero books.
Right. And
as someone who kind of came to Grant through Justice League, like, that's always been the thing that's really attracted me to his work, that he, you know, is really, his superhero books aren't cynical. Like, they can be dark and violent, but they're never anti-heroic, or, you know, they always value kind of heroism and doing the right thing. You know, they're all kind of in that All-Star Superman mold. But every time he gets out of that, you know, if it's even the Invisibles and the Filth, and just kind of Annihilator is a really good recent example. It seems like, yeah, of course his superhero books are all like that because he's getting all that out in other places. And Nameless was the one that he was like, oh yeah, this is going to be horrible. Like, and knowing the kind of stuff you like and knowing the kind of, you know, I've read, what is it, Milk Run?
Oh.
Yeah, I've read that thing.
Oh man, that's a good one. Maybe I won't promote that one too loud here, but
is this something that kind of fits your ideal of what you want to do in comics a little bit better? Like, I mean, I know that you enjoy drawing Batman, but is this kind of something that fits with what you want to do a little bit more?
Well, I mean, I like it always, I guess. I love, you know, bright and shiny stuff. I also really like drawing, you know, cute little kid stuff. Like, I did a variant cover of Dustin Wynn's, what is that book called? Little Gotham, where I got to draw Batcow and Damien as like super deformed little mini versions of themselves. And it was so much fun. I love drawing, you know, cute, funny stuff. But I also love drawing people's heads getting ripped in half. So, yeah, I don't think I would like to stay sick and depraved constantly, because it can get to be, you know, kind of a drag on your soul. Well, I don't believe in a soul. It can get to be a drag on your brain. Like, there have been times when, you know, I'll be laying in bed at night and I literally cannot stop thinking about murder. And it's like, this is a fucking nightmare, man. Like, this, I am literally in my own, like, trapped in my own hellscape where I cannot think of anything but people getting destroyed. But it's fun to think about that stuff once in a while, but when you can't break out of it, it's a real drag. So after this one, I'll probably draw, you know, Batmite team up or something for a couple issues to cleanse my palate.
Well, I'm excited about titling this episode "I Can't Stop Thinking About Murder," and I'm also excited about testifying at your upcoming trial.
Yeah, I don't know if we could slide "Can't Stop Thinking About Murder" through on iTunes without getting like some NSA people looking at us. But the interesting thing to me about Nameless is what an odd genre mix it is.
Yeah.
There's a line that made me laugh out loud in issue two. That is just a straight up elevator pitch for the book, right. That where it says it's The Exorcist meets 2001, and yeah. I mean that's pretty accurate. But then there's like it's The Exorcist in that there's a possession story, but there's this weird mix of like almost like slasher horror or, you know, The Shining style stuff where people are writing things in blood on walls. But then there's also this kind of like more mystical occult aspect of this where, you know, there's all the symbology on the spacesuits. And the symbology on doors and on the asteroid and all that stuff. So it's not just like constant murder, murder, murder. There's a really kind of interesting genre mix there. Like, as far as art goes, like, how do you kind of mix that stuff up so that there's that horror feel, but there's also that sci-fi feel and then kind of the mystical feel at the same time? Because I definitely get that sense from your art that it's all those three things at once.
Well, thank you. It's definitely, it's hard trying to, you know, serve all three masters, I guess, at once. So I'm just trying to, I mean, my first goal is always making things as clear as possible, but then if with a super weirdo horror comic, that's not always the goal. So I'll start off clear and then just try and figure out how I can draw it, you know, kind of subtly weird. So like when you glance at it, you know exactly what you're looking at, but if you stare at it a little longer, you'll be like, wait a minute, what the hell is going on there? So that's kind of my intent with the weird, you know, kind of the weird layouts and, you know, the weird shapes and stuff, is just making it kind of subconsciously feel strange. This, all the symbols I found on the internet, and then there's all, you know, Grant's script is filled with all sorts of crazy bullshit that he reads. So so it's just like there's weirdness coming from all over the place, and then I get to draw, you know, some poor guy getting horribly stabbed, you know, once in a while. That happens in number two, right? That horrible stabbing. Or is that in number three? I'm all mixed up. Oh, but the horrible stabbing is in number three. I'm living in the past and the future.
Now we know there's a stabbing in number three.
Yeah, spoiler.
Now I'm not going to read it. Thanks a lot, jerk.
So okay, I have a couple questions for you about design stuff and like the collaboration on it, because first of all, there's the, it's kind of ill defined. MacGuffin thing that is the like the 3D asterisk.
The Exaxar. Yeah,
the Exaxar. How much of the design of that was strictly you, or did Morrison give you any clues about the design of it? Because the thing that really gets me about it is that it's not symmetrical, and right. So it makes me like look at it and study it for so much longer than I would if it was just like a symmetrical 3D shape.
Good. I am glad to hear you say that. His direction was, it looks like a weird, I mean, it's like a, you know, weird metal shape, but he wanted, and it's like called the 60 stone, which I use because it's got 60 faces on it, which was a real pain in the ass to figure out. But he wanted it to look like, I can't remember the word, but when you've got two shapes and then you kind of smash them together, like two polyhedrons that are like combined and offset. Like if you've got a cube and a pyramid combined, whatever that weird shape is called is what he wanted. And so I, you know, got on Wikipedia and I even emailed like a geometry professor. I put out the call, the bat signal on Twitter, like, who knows any geometry professors? I need to ask these people some questions. And so since it's called the 60 stone, I just played off on that and said, well, this thing either has to have 60 vertices or 60 faces on it, just so that I'll feel like I'm doing it right. And so I took whatever, this shape has some funny name to it, but it's basically a cube. And then you pull out all of the faces until it looks like kind of a 3D plus sign. And then I took that, duplicated it, and angled it 45 degrees on all angles so that it, you know, is perfectly centered, but it is off kilter and just kind of feels strange. So when you said that it's like uncomfortably asymmetrical, that is exactly what I was going for. And there's also in the series, there's a whole idea of like, you know, universe B trying to encroach on our world or whatever. And so I like the idea of these two shapes kind of, you know, forcing themselves on each other in a really, you know, kind of uncomfortable way.
Was there ever a point where you emailed Grant, you were like, hey, what if it's like the 12 stone?
Right. I should have.
And then the other kind of designy thing I wanted to ask you about is, it's in issue one a little bit. It's in issue two a lot more, where you have characters writing in what is essentially angel language, right, on the walls in their blood or in somebody's blood.
Right.
There was this weird thing that went off my head as I was reading that where I was like, did Burnham letter all that? Was he going above his pay grade and doing like lettering?
Yeah, you know, looking at it, I think I may have typed it out in a font and then kind of traced over it to make it look all, you know, squoogey. I did it, but I can't remember how I did it. But I suspect that I found like a handwriting font, typed the whole thing out, and then, you know, kind of traced over it.
Disappointing. No, I'm kidding.
You should have cut your own finger and and used your own blood.
No, I mean, it's...
And shit. There's shit in there, too.
It's fine if you don't care about crafts at all.
Right.
Like, then I guess this is how you do comics.
Yeah.
No, Nameless is good stuff. I'm really enjoying it. And it is a weird one. And it is a visually engaging book, which I think is really fun.
Well, thank you. Yeah, there's some more, there's all sorts of crazy shit, you know, in the next couple issues too. It's yeah.
Oh, pretty really? Happy. That's surprising.
Yeah. We're not backing off.
The angel war that killed the dinosaurs isn't the weirdest thing that's in this.
Oh yeah, that thing's pretty weird, huh? That was like the idea that he mentioned that got me the most excited, was that, you know, the asteroid belt is made of the destroyed fifth planet. I said, that is exactly the sort of bullshit I want to draw.
See, Chris, you do it to yourself. When you say that's what you want to draw, you end up having to figure out how to draw a 60 stone.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I like reading that stuff. I like thinking about it. And I like drawing it too. And it's weird. Like I don't believe in any of that Chariots of the Gods stuff, but man, I love hearing about it. It's like, you know, twisting your mind towards the bullshit zone is a whole lot of fun. And it reminds me of how, you know, how exciting I thought that stuff was when I was a kid and believed in it. So I think it's, you know, super fun to, you know, imagine a world where that could be possible, or just imagine myself being stupider and actually believing it.
If your next comic isn't called Twisting Your Mind to the Bullshit Zone, I'm going to be really disappointed in you.
Oh, shit.
All right. And with that, I think it is about time for us to throw it over to our listeners to ask a few questions over Twitter. And Matt, if the listeners want to get in on that, how exactly can they go about it?
Well, what they need to do is they need to become a writer of comics, but in the process of becoming a writer of comics, they also need to become a very well-paid creator of cartoon shows, and in doing so, figure out that they can literally do whatever the fuck they want because in comics, because they're super rich now. And upon doing that, essentially I'm telling you to become Joe Casey, just so you can figure that out. Then sign up for an account on twitter.com and follow the ISB, that's Chris Sims, and high-minded MW, that's me, Matt Wilson. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 6:30 Pacific, and that is the time we will put out the call for questions for our guest, and you can ask them whatever the fuck you want, like you're going to hear people ask Chris Burnham right now.
And our first question comes from Tales to Enrage on Twitter, who would like to know, Chris Burnham, you are tasked with fighting a bear. You can use only melee weapons. Which do you choose and why?
What, I don't even know what constitutes a melee weapon. Does a halberd, halberd, is that even the word?
A halberd is a melee, not a gun, or not a ranged weapon, not a gun or a bow.
Dungeons and Dragons nerds are the worst. Yeah, give me the halberd because it's real long and pointy.
How are you going to sit there and call me a Dungeons and Dragons nerd when your first thought is a halberd?
How about a morning star? I always like those too. The mace on a chain, that shit's hot. Give me, you know what? I'm changing my mind to morning star. I always thought that was rad.
A mace on a chain, that shit's hot. All right, morning star to take down a bear. At RomCom Your Mom on Twitter has a question for all of us. What is your favorite Grant Morrison story? A story about the man, not a story he has written.
I like that poop in his pants on the plane story a lot.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, it's too much to get into, but you should seek it out. It's amazing.
Matt, do you have a favorite story about Grant Morrison, the man?
Yeah. He met me at Comic-Con, and I gave him the books I wrote.
I think my favorite one is still the one about talking to the Superman cosplayer and then deciding to write All-Star Superman. That a guy who wrote Justice League for 3 years saw a dude in a Superman costume and talked to him as though he was Superman. Like, that he is that kind of weird. Which is great. Like, don't get me wrong. That is great. We have a question from Jackson in a Cup, who says, what death trap would you build to stop Batman?
What the fuck are these questions, man? I don't know. I'm still a sucker for the spiked walls closing in real slow. I just like how people escape that a different way every time. So I just want to see him get out of that.
Gonna stop him though. Like, we've seen him get out of that multiple times.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't care. It does it for me every time. Maybe there's glue. Oh yeah. Maybe there's glue on it too, so that he's stuck. And then he has to, like, you know, get out of his suit and be like naked Batman to escape.
Are you literally a villain from the TV show?
Yes.
All right, let's see.
Wait, hold on. Scratch that. Do you remember in the Mr. Miracle special when he has to escape that super death trap that that like Darkseid and Granny Goodness make?
Yes.
I want to see Batman get out of that one. There you go.
So either a a spiked walls with glue floor trap, or right. One in a comic that you have already read.
you're getting it exactly right.
Let's see here. Charlotte of Oz would like to know, what is the name of your Smurf persona? Your Smurfsona, if you will.
Snarky Smurf? Belligerent Smurf?
Belligerent Smurf probably wouldn't make it in the village. They would probably kick him out pretty fast.
Right. What about Smirky Smurf?
I like Smirky Smurf a lot, all right. Actually.
Smirky Smurf is.
Alex Chung has a question about the X-Men book that we didn't talk about because it's brand new.
All right.
Will Ramon Villalobos be drawing the new X-Men characters in Wrestling Holds?
I'd be surprised if he ever drew them not wrestling. No matter what I write, he's going to draw them wrestling for sure.
Sounds pretty good, actually. I'm pretty into that.
They're going to be the suplex men.
Oh, shit.
Oh, Matt, you've done it again.
Oh, my God. That is amazing.
All right. I think we need to cut it there. I think that's it.
I think we can consider there. That stolen.
We got time. Ask some more questions.
All right. All right. All right. Let's see here. Here's a good one for you, Chris. The Kais on Twitter wants to know, what do you think about DC bringing back Damian Wayne and giving him superpowers?
I think it's a pretty great gag. I like the gag of Damian being a grumpy Robin to Dick Grayson's positive Batman, and now the gag of him being a teeny little Superman, and Batman is just a normal dude trying to keep tabs on his brat son who can now beat the shit out of him. I think is really fun. I doubt it goes for more than 3, 4, 5 issues, but I think as a fun little story, it's read.
No one can beat up Batman, Chris. I don't know why you didn't say that. That's offensive to me. Let's see here.
How do you amplify a brat? Make him physically powerful. That's actually right. That's a pretty good idea. Yeah.
What is your favorite story or issue featuring Morrison's Batman, either one that you drew or otherwise?
Oh, geez.
That one comes from John Borgi on Twitter.
I really like the one that J.H. Williams drew with the Isle of Mr. Mayhew. I like that a lot.
That's a good one. That's a real good one. That was my favorite part of the run until R.I.P. came out.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, that's right. And my two favorite stories are not ones you've drawn, so
I don't care.
With that.
That's fine. I don't have human emotions, and that's probably the issues that I've looked at the most, because that's where all the Batman Inc. characters first appeared. So whenever I was trying to figure out what Knight's outfit looked like or whatever, I was always looking at that.
Oh man, I do love the Knight. Now, did you look at that one, or did you go back and look at JLA Classified? Because McGinnis did they show up in JLA at the end of the Ultramarine story, but they get kind of a soft redesign from McGinnis in JLA Classified.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to tell me that. I'm pretty sure.
I just like talking about it. I'm sorry. I'm Batman-splaining it to you.
Jesus Christ. Well, let's leave it at Batman-splaining. I'm pretty sure I was looking at the JH stuff, but maybe I glanced at the McGinnis stuff as well. I don't know.
No, those are both really, really good stories. I love that. I love that story on the island. It's so great.
Yeah.
It's got the Black Hand in it, man. It's got the Clove of Heroes and the Black Hand.
Yeah, it's got the whole everything. It's got everything you'd want out of a Batman story. Him showing up a bunch of jumps, but also building them up as he's showing them up. It's awesome.
All right, final question. It's going to come from Brendan42 on Twitter. What the holy balls is going on in Nameless?
I think it's totally clear.
Is that it? Yeah, all the explanation you're going to offer?
How about this? I think if you look at it through the lens of it's John Constantine starring in the movie Armageddon, maybe that'll give him like enough reference point for it to make a little bit more sense.
Oh my god, that is exactly what it is.
I hope a character exclaims that in a future issue.
Yeah, right. It's like Hellblazer meets Event Horizon.
Oh man. All right, everybody. That has been our interview with Chris Burnham. Nameless number 1 and 2 are on shelves now, and E is for Extinction. The Secret Wars crossover is coming out when? April, May?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
June?
At some point.
Summer 2015?
I literally have no idea.
Keep an eye out for that. Pick up Officer Down and Nixon's Pals and Batman Incorporated, too, while you're at it. They're all good comics. Chris, thanks for joining us. It's always an absolute joy to talk to you about stuff. And we will talk to you soon. Before we let you go, can you let everyone know where they can find you online?
You can find me at chrisburnham.com is my seldom updated Tumblr, or you can find me on Twitter. I am The Burnham on Twitter.
All right, Chris Burnham, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you to Chris Burnham for joining us on the show. Like I said, he wrote the line, Batman Kick, which would probably do pretty well on our ongoing list of the best quotes in comics history, the word heavyweight champion.
That's right. This is the Word Heavyweight Champions, the segment where listeners send us lists of quotes from comic books, and then we build a top 100 list of the best comic book quotes ever scribbled down in a word balloon. And this list this week comes from a line stepper by the name of Daniel Fernandez.
Oh, all these line stepping going on.
Oh, man. They line step so hard.
Stepping over that line. We're pushing back the velvet rope, and all you scrubs in the line got to watch these guys walking into the club.
Here's the first
Ajax.
One. Here's the first one from Daniel. This is from JLA Classified number 3.
I know what it is already. You don't even need to read it.
Well, I'm going to read it for the sake of our listeners.
Okay.
These no-nonsense solutions of yours just don't hold water in a complex world of jet-powered apes and time travel.
I put this on Twitter as the single best line of Grant Morrison's career. It's so good. I love that story, by the way. We were talking about it with Chris Burnham. That JLA Classified story is fantastic because it's basically the authority, you know, the Global Guardians kind of standing in for the authority, the former Ultramarines, going up against the most DC comic villain there is, Gorilla Grodd, the telepathic talking gorilla, and just getting their asses handed to them because they are ill-equipped to deal with the problems of the DC universe. I love it. I love that line. And I love it because it's Superman being patronizing in a way. Like, that's the one kind of strike against it, is that Superman is kind of very condescending with that. It's like somebody asked me, I think on Tumblr, like, why doesn't Batman kill the Joker? And it's like, well, if you really need an in-continuity reason for why Batman doesn't kill the Joker, do you know how hard it would be for him to fight a ghost every week? Like, ghosts exist in the DC universe, guys.
Yeah.
You know, time travel exists. Do you want him to fight one Joker or 10 Jokers? there's a good reason. So I love the idea that, you know, that people look at superhero comics and they want to take the solutions that would make sense in the real world. But superhero comics aren't the real world. Superhero comics have jetpack gorillas.
Right.
Okay. They operate on a different set of rules.
Right. It's almost like, I don't know if it's Superman being condescending as much as he's almost breaking the fourth wall a little bit. Like, he's kind of saying, like, yes, we live in a comic book world. You know what I mean?
No, I think he definitely is.
Okay, so do you think – I don't think it beats the Preacher quote.
I would say I definitely don't think it beats you should have brought more Thors.
Yeah.
Because I laughed my ass off. Told me that one. I do think it beats I did it 35 minutes ago.
Okay. I don't think it beats the Preacher quote.
Yeah, but that's not even the best Preacher quote, though.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I would put it above the Preacher quote and below the Thor quote.
All right. I hope we get a better Preacher quote in here, even though that's a pretty good one.
I mean, look, somebody's going to send us Miss.
Yeah, I hope so. Okay, the next quote is from Ultimates 2, number 12.
Oh, boy.
And it's Captain America saying, "Surrender, surrender, you think this letter on my head stands for France?" I hate this quote.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, it's not going to be in the top 100.
No.
I think that's, I will say this, it's a funny quote. And it kind of makes sense for that version, for Asshole Cap to say that, like Ultimate's Asshole Cap. The problem, of course, is that Captain America fought in World War II. Like, he was there. Captain America would be well aware that the French Resistance, they were not, the French Resistance didn't surrender. Like, the people that Cap knows, that Cap would have seen in France, that is not a line he would have said. Like, that is a line of a 21st century conservative.
Here's my problem with it. It's not even like the historical inaccuracy of it. It's that it's just the easiest fucking joke. The easiest fucking joke. And like,
I mean, I remember, Gaze into the Fist of Dread is the easiest joke too.
Not so much though. I mean, it was set up in the text of the story, you know, but it's, I think there's a setup punchline thing going on there. This is just coming out of nowhere doing like a ha-ha France surrenders joke, which is tired. And I remember like reading this issue when I very much liked the Ultimates and getting to that page and just groaning and just being like disgusted by that line.
I feel like the Ultimates is really enjoyable up to a point. Like, I mean, look, Captain America does Guile's flash kick on a super terrorist with lightsabers. Like, there's kind of a, like there is a kind of visceral fist pump joy to be had with the Ultimates. But I do feel like the Ultimates, almost more than anything else, hits that moment in the book where it just stops being good. And I feel like you could put it all on that scene.
Yeah, there's also a weird thing in the Ultimates about how, like, despite it being an updated version of the Avengers, it now reads, like, a decade later, as way more dated than the old Avengers comics.
Well, it's a thing where, like, Ken Lowry, who will never be on the show, was talking about watching Casino Royale, which is, you know, legit one of my favorite movies. I really love Casino Royale. But he's like, yeah, this is a movie that has flip phones in it, and it's about Texas Hold'em. It could not be more 2007.
That's 100%.
And the Ultimates could not be more 2005.
Yeah, and it just, like, it's, to be as recent as it is, it's mega dated.
Yeah. Like, even, like, the Authority, I think,
it's not gonna,
is less dated.
It's not going to age any better.
Yeah,
the older it gets.
So yeah, I'm just saying, like, look, this is not making it on the top 100. Why are we even bothering?
Yeah. The last quote on Daniel's list is, "But I am the revelation, the tiger force at the core of all things. When you cry out in your dreams, it is Darkseid
that
you see." That's from the Forever People number 3.
Oh, god damn, that is a good one. The Tiger Force. Oh my god. People are blindsiding me with these Kirby lines, man. They're so fucking good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I said, like, Forever People is like my least favorite Kirby book, and yet it has, like, Darkseid shows up in that book more than anywhere else. I feel like. Like, he first appears with Jimmy Olsen. Obviously he's in New Gods, but man, he does the speeching in Forever People. God, the Tiger Force at the center of all things. That is such a fucking amazing page. That's going high on the list. Oh, man.
Okay, it's above the quote we ranked just a minute ago?
Yeah, I would say it goes above that one.
Above More Thors?
Yeah.
Above I Own Airwolf?
That's real tough. What do you think, Matt?
I don't think it goes above I Own Airwolf.
Okay, then we're going to put that. That is the new number 4 on the list.
All right.
The Tiger Force at the center of all things. God, that's so good.
Yeah.
Why are those comics so good, Matt? I mean, I know why they're so good. Because they've said, here's 4 books, Jack. Have fun.
When you cry out in your dreams, it is Darkseid that you see.
God damn.
All right. That's it for our Word Heavyweight Champion segment for this week.
One list this week.
We are overstuffed on time. If you would like to send us a list for a future episode, you can do that by emailing us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do that at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. But preferably, you should do it on our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That's where you can stream the show, read show notes, leave comments, and download the show. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that is where you will find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review, please. The more 5-star reviews we get on iTunes, the more we're featured on iTunes, which means we can do more stuff. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. The D is as in danger. And you will find links to everything that I am doing and have done on the internet. Chris, where can everybody find all of your stuff?
Everybody can find links to everything I do at about.me/ChrisSims. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at TheISB and on Tumblr, theisb.tumblr.com. Make sure to check out Sailor Business, the podcast that I do with Jordan D. White, where we watch every episode of the classic 1992 Sailor Moon anime with a guest each and every week. There's a lot of really, really fun stuff on that show. And get the word out. It's a good one. Make sure to read the comics that Matt and I write. You can find links to those at our about.me pages as well. And that about does it. That's all the plugs we got this week, right, Matt? No more plugs?
There's a new Movie Fighters episode coming this week.
Oh, there is. It's a good one. I'm excited about it.
We're going to be watching the 2014 remake of RoboCop. So.
That's right. We're going to be watching RoboCop, and I am choosing to ignore any other information in that sentence. Very excited to watch RoboCop with you, Matt.
Yes, that should be a fun time. Until then, everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of War Rocket Ajax.
That's right. It's been Ajax 244. We'll be back next week, so have a great week. And again, thank you so much for listening. Yeah!
Flash. Hey, Flash! From this day on,